Hello and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review. I'm Ben Rylan, and on today's show, we're going to be taking the temperature of the podcast industry, and we'll be discussing the current favourites of the podcast reviewer for The Telegraph, Pete Norton. Pete, welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much. Very nice to be here.
Now, we of course have just stumbled into 2017 after quite the revolutionary year for the podcast. 2016 saw some listenership figures going on the up. Politics was getting dissected, perhaps unsurprisingly, and apps and platforms improving all the time as well. Pete, where do you think the podcast, well, the art of podcasting as a whole is really at the moment?
I think we've seen the medium really mature in the last 12 months, largely driven by the fact that kind of money and professionalism is beginning to accumulate at the top of the industry. So you've had a lot of ad sales going up, venture capital becoming interested in podcasting networks, which are increasing their slate of shows. So at the kind of top end of the medium, it's definitely becoming more professionalised and a little bit less Wild Westy. And I think that's been largely good for listeners so far, because the quality of shows has been going up and been kind of spreading across the whole, you know, there's a lot of variety now available.
Is that also because we've seen a lot of very well-established publishers from the old world of news publishing? A lot of them have been launching their own podcasts quite increasingly in numbers over the past few months. New York Times has really jumped in their head first. The Financial Times also following them as well. Just about every media company you can think of now has at least one podcast, most of the time multiple podcasts. That's really changed the idea of what a podcast is, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I think we'll see more of that. I think it's become a bit like, if you look back sort of 5 years ago, a lot of outlets were suddenly scrambling to have a social media presence, and CEOs wondering what that meant, and, you know, we need to have one. And I think you're beginning, podcasting is now beginning to have that kind of cachet within legacy media. And that, yeah, 2017, I'm sure we'll see more of that.
What does that mean then for, so to have someone like the Financial Times in there making podcasts, what does that mean for the person sitting at home who's been making their own podcast in their bedroom or something that, you know, may be done quite with quite few resources yet has really established itself quite an audience and built up quite a loyal following? What does it mean to have the big money players in there maybe cutting off a slice of their pie?
I think that's a very good question, and one fear that some of us in the, you know, who love the medium have for this coming year is that it will become more stratified, so that there's going to be a concentration of professional resources and therefore ad revenue at the top of the market, and that leaves it harder for people to, the indie bands basically of podcasting, to break into it. So that's one thing that, yeah, I'm a bit concerned about. However, at the moment, I think there's still room for that to happen, and, you know, there are positive signs as well. There's, you know, the US has been leading the market for a long time, but you're beginning to have US producers interested in the UK as a market for talent. So Panoply, who is Slate's podcast network, have just recently set up an office in the UK and are hunting for producers here. Apparently they were saying that there just aren't any radio producers left in Brooklyn to make podcasts, so they're kind of having to look over
them all up.
They have, yeah. So it's interesting times. I mean, I still feel enthused about the medium, and I'm, you know, every week there's a new show to listen to that's being made interestingly. But I am concerned that, yeah, the indie side of the market will, you might have it going towards more the sort of, you know, it's very easy for a band to make CDs and sell it out of the boot of a car. That doesn't mean they get a big audience, and I think we might find something like that with the podcast industry as well.
Mm, if you build it, they don't necessarily come.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on now to a few podcasts that you've been listening to recently. We'll start with the one called Homecoming. Now, last time you were on this show, Pete, we were discussing the fictional news bulletin Welcome to Night Vale, and we talked about how, well, there isn't much in the way of scripted fictional podcasting. Well, Homecoming, which is made by Gimlet Media, is one of the first ones to do this, and it does so with an all-star cast. Perhaps you should set the storyline up for us first, though.
So it's Homecoming. It's a slightly Jason Bourne-y type story in a little bit, in that it's about a kind of a secret government program for, well, ostensibly for rehabilitating veterans after they've been in combat. So it's set in the States, more or less contemporary. It stars Caroline Keener, as she's like a caseworker, and Oscar Isaacs is one of her cases. He's a soldier just returned from a war. And I won't kind of say much more than that, because there's quite a lot of mystery and intrigue to this program and what happens within it. But it's very well made, and I think it does something that a lot of radio drama struggles to do, which is it credits its audience with a good degree of intelligence and capacity to remember things. One of my real bugbears about audio dramas, you get a lot of expositionary dialogue, like really boring people telling you, oh, so here we are in the secret bunker room looking at the filing cabinet.
Like the old days of television.
Yes, yeah. And I think this brings a slightly more, it feels a bit more like, you know, sort of the great HBO dramas that we have loved, or that I've loved over the years, you know, like The Wire and Sopranos, is bringing a bit more of that sensibility to the, what they're calling scripted content now. I think that's the sort of like American term for these dramas. Mm-hmm. But the cast is also the first one that's had a really big name cast. So it's got Caroline Keener, Oscar Isaacs, David Schwimmer, Ross from Friends, plays an amazingly nasty and kind of passive-aggressive line manager type boss in this thing. And he's for me is the pick of the bunch, actually. But it's really, you know, it's got a kind of A-list cast. And I think we will probably see more of that this year as well, that the movement of, you know, known actors into this sphere, because it hasn't really happened before.
Mm, indeed, indeed. Let's have a little bit of a clip then. This is from the podcast that we were just talking about, Homecoming.
So how was everything?
Oh, it's wonderful stuff.
Good. Anything else?
No.
I'll be right back with the check.
Say Heidi, yeah? That's your name?
Yep. Just like the name tag says.
Have you been working here long, Heidi?
About 4 years, I guess.
You are Heidi Bergman, right? That is your last name?
Yes, do I know
I'm
you?
I'm Thomas Carrasco. I work for the Department of Defense. You worked at the Homecoming Initiative.
Well, yes, that was years ago, but what is this?
Heidi, I just have a few questions for you.
I don't really
have
any time.
How long did you work at the Homecoming Initiative?
Wait, can we... I have a break. Can we talk outside?
Yeah, sure. Right now?
Yes, out back. I'll meet you there.
Okay.
I'll be right there.
Pete, it's interesting. When television came around, there were a lot of people working in the movie business who thought it was a terrifying invention and that it would kill off movies. That, of course, didn't happen. But at least in the US, it did kill off the radio drama. Most American audiences don't really know anything about listening to a drama via the audio form. That's a little bit different here in the UK, though, isn't it? Largely thanks, perhaps, to the BBC. What do you think is the response to Homecoming, then, for US audiences? Do you think there's a lot of enthusiasm for this sort of art form beyond just this one particular drama?
I think so, yeah. I mean, there are a few others. For my money, Homecoming is the one that I've been most impressed with of recent months. But Panoply have done a couple. There's one called Life After and one called The Message, which are also, I mean, they often, one thing I have to complain about with these kind of dramas is they often gather around this kind of conspiratorial government plot, you know, that you don't get very, it seems they really go for that kind of that sort of narrative, and it gets a bit samey after a while. Homecoming is arresting enough that didn't bother me, but there aren't a whole bunch of like quirky, interesting dramas, nothing like the variety you get on Radio 4. And you're right to say that the American audience aren't, this is not something that they have a kind of a real tradition of the last 30 years. Obviously they did. The guy who made Homecoming was inspired in part by a 1950s radio drama that was all a series of phone conversations. It was like someone phoning, I think, yeah, a series of like wrong numbers or something like this. So there, you know, he's looking back to the sort of the 50s. But yeah, I'm interested to see how much the American audience takes to this. One thing that they have got going for it is because they're kind of unencumbered by some of the things that we perhaps are here in the UK, because they're working from a pretty much blank slate. They don't have a lot of influences.
Sort of reinventing the art form from the ground up then.
Yeah.
Indeed. Well, that is Homecoming. It's available to download from Gimlet Media right now. Now, speaking of the BBC, we'll turn to the BBC World Service now for a series called 50 Things That Made the Modern Economy. This one explores the inventions, ideas and innovations that contributed to the economic world that we live in. Now, Pete, what sort of things are we talking about here?
So you've got a really nice range of different things, from concrete to the iPhone, to shipping containers, the diesel engine. It's ongoing. I think this is going to be running over the next sort of year or so, at least several months. So you're getting one episode a week. They're about 8-10 minutes long. And they are, they're real masterpieces of brevity and audio storytelling. That bring to mind a little bit that there was this, you know, this fantastic, it's obviously influenced by A History of the World in 100 Objects, which was from 5 years ago or so with Neil McGregor. So it's kind of slightly object-led history and economic sociology in this case. But the presenter, Tim Harford, he's brilliant kind of sideways glance at some of these things. So I think we've got a clip from the concrete episode here.
Indeed. I was just actually fascinated by what you said. iPhones, concrete, shipping containers. It's a very strange array of objects to bring into one podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, and but he shows how each of them have played a key role in the world that now surrounds us. But it's not the kind of pat angle on it. I've been surprised by every episode.
Well, we've got a clip of that episode that you just mentioned. Now, here is the presenter, Tim Harford. He's describing a Piso Firm, a Mexican social project in which poor households were given $150 worth of concrete by the state.
Workers would drive concrete mixers through poor neighbourhoods, stop outside the home of the needy family that were waiting for them, and pour out the porridge-like mixture through the door right into the living room. Then they'd show the occupants how to spread and smooth the gloop and make sure they knew how long to leave it to dry. And then off they'd drive to the next appointment with the next family. Piso firme means firm floor. And when economists studied the programme, they found that the ready-mixed concrete dramatically improved children's education. How so? Previously, the floors were made of dirt. Parasitic worms thrive in dirt, spreading diseases that stunt kids' growth and make them miss school. Concrete floors are much easier to keep clean, so the kids were healthier and their test scores improved. And parents in the programme's households became happier, less stressed, and less prone to depression. That seems to be $150 well spent.
So the format here seems to be largely taking the form of basically a written essay with some musical layers thrown in there to keep it a little bit interesting. Do you see any problem with that being quite a dominating format for the podcast medium at large at the moment? I'm thinking of something like You Must Remember This, which, of course, is the Hollywood History podcast that, admittedly, I'm a huge fan of. And it's been written up as one of the biggest favourite podcasts around the world in multiple lists ending 2016. And yet, really, all it ever is a written essay which Carina Longworth reads at length. Is there anything wrong with it being as simple as that?
Not at all. I mean, I think it lives or dies on the strength of the writing and on the narration. But in the case of this show, Tim, I've been amazed by how well written they are and how insightful and how much they managed to pack into sort of 10 minutes. And this guy's obviously a very experienced. He's got several books to his name and has been doing this for a long time. So I think there are times when it becomes very, that can stutter and become dull. And I've certainly heard a few too many podcasts that someone reading out some, you know, kind of pet hobby love of their own for an hour, and you can kind of, you have to be really into it to stick around for that long.
And they need to be very good at basically at speaking, don't they? I mean, it's not easy to read something for a long time and keep it interesting.
No, and also not to sound like there's this big trick of radio is obviously not to sound like you're reading. You often find that in amateur podcasts where you can hear the clunk of the words off the page. And Tim Harford doesn't have that for me in this one. And the production is very nice as well. I think this is an example of the World Service being really nimble. And this has been number one of the podcast charts in the UK this last week. I checked the other day, actually, which I was surprised to find. But they've obviously, this is broadcasting on the World Service and living as a podcast. And I think they've done a really fantastic job.
Simplicity at its best. That's 50 Things That Made the Modern Economy. It's available to listen to on the BBC World Service right now. And I will end with a stalwart of the podcasting world, 99% in Visible. For the uninitiated, this podcast tells stories based around design and the thought that goes into creating things. Hosted by Roman Mars, it's hugely popular with over 150 million downloads. Let's hear a little example from an episode entitled Space Trash.
Explorer is in orbit, broadcasting to the world its coded scientific data. Cosmic ray intensity, meteor impact, solar radiation. These are the dry facts that will help carry a man ever farther into the age of space.
And with that, the space race was underway, and the two world powers began launching more and more satellites every year.
A lot of these early missions failed before they ever made it into orbit.
That's producer Emmett Fitzgerald.
But there were successes, and little by little, space started to fill up with human-made objects. By the summer of 1961, there were 115 satellites circling the Earth. And it was during that summer that the U.S. launched an unmanned rocket carrying the Transit 4A satellite.
And about 2 hours after launch, the rocket blew up.
It was the first known object to unintentionally explode in space. And it created about 300 fragments of totally useless space junk. Some of these pieces got pulled into the atmosphere and burned up, but around 200 are still up there today.
You know, Pete, it's interesting. I was at the Science Museum here in London over the Christmas break, and one of the displays that they have there is just a window display of things. And a lot of them are things that you've seen a million times before, but until you see them sitting there in a museum behind some glass, it might be something that you remember from your childhood, but, you know, it was an everyday item, a vacuum cleaner or something. Mm. But seeing it there in front of you, it makes you really look at how interesting the design of that object is and how genius it can actually be. It sounds as though this podcast is really picking up on some of that, making you think perhaps a little bit more analytically about something that really has always been there.
Definitely. I mean, that is kind of the entire remit of their show, and they've been doing it. I mean, Roman Mars, the presenter of this, came out of public radio background and started this show, I think, in 2007 or something, like a long time ago, and has built it from the ground up. But every episode has that kind of sense of, yeah, alighting on a discovery that was hidden in plain sight. But, you know, there's a nice broad remit. It's not only architecture, it's not only industrial design. He did an episode recently about the Office of Presidential Correspondence, they're called, who are the people that handle all of the many thousands of letters that flow into the US president every week, and the way in which that is designed, if you like. Mm. So it's a real chocolate box. And it's beautifully, as you can tell, that's very, you know, meticulously produced, and they have a lot of nice sound design, and also they keep in within this kind of 20-minute, you know, the golden window. Mm. One thing I'd say about 99% Invisible, I think it's got the best website of any podcast that I know of. The website really is an additional layer of content where they have long essays and videos that back up the audio that you've heard. So you can listen to it as a standalone piece, but you can also go there and really delve into the story.
So much effort going into it. Just briefly, does that wide berth when it comes to the interest realm that this can come at? You know, you just mentioned there you can have lots of different topics that come into creating this podcast here. Does that sort of wide interest barrier bother you at all? Do you like being able to tune into a podcast and know exactly what you're going to get, or do you prefer to perhaps be surprised?
Personally, I prefer to be surprised, but I think you get both. A lot of podcasts are kind of dog whistle niche broadcasting, where we're going to talk about the Star Wars episode 4 today, in minute by minute. There is literally a podcast that does that, actually, that goes minute by minute through.
Not surprised at all.
Or Goodfellas. Oh, there's one which, you know, This American Life surprised me. You know, I want to hear something that I didn't have any idea I was going to know about.
Yeah, that podcast about the West Wing is still going as well. Incredible. So you can find out more at 99percentinvisible.org. That's 99 with the two numbers. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks to my guest, Pete Norton. You have been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. The show was produced by Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for our literary chat. But for now, goodbye. Thanks for listening.